Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashodha Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nashta Praesha Badreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Today we're coming close to the end of the first canto, just a few verses away. It's Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, text 35. Api me Bhagavan Prita.
Api me Bhagavan Prita.
Krishna Pandu Sutta Priya.
Krishna Pandu Sutta Priya.
Patrisvaseya Pratyartam. Patrisvaseya Pratyartam. Tadgotrasyatta Bandavaha. Tadgotrasyatta Bandavaha. Please chant. Me Bhagavan Prita. Me Bhagavan Prita. Krishna Pandu Pratapya. Patrisvaseya Pratyartam. Tadgotrasyatta Bandavaha. Hime Bhagavan Prita. Krishna Pandu Sutapya. Patrisvaseya Pratyartam. Tadgotrasyatta Bandavaha. Api me Bhagavan Prita. Krishna Pandu Sutta Priya. Krishna Pandu Sutta Priya. Patrisvaseya Pratyartam. Tadgotrasyatta Bandava. Api. Definitely. Me. Unto me. The Bhagavan. The personality of Godhead. Pritaha. Pleased. Krishna, the Lord, Pandu Sutta, the sons of King Pandu, Priya, dear, Baitri, in relation with the Father, Svaseya, the sons of the sister, Priti, satisfaction, Artham, in the matter of Tat, there, Gotrasya, of the descendant, Ata, accepted, Bandavaha, as a friend. Translation: Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. Purport. A pure and exclusive devotee of the Lord serves his family interests more dexterously than others who are attached to illusory family affairs. Generally, people are attached to family matters, and the whole economic impetus of human society is moving under the influence of family affection. Such deluded persons have no information that one can render better service to the family by becoming a devotee of the Lord. The Lord gives special protection to the family members and descendants of a devotee, even though such members are themselves non-devotees. Maharaj Prahlad was a great devotee of the Lord, but his father, Hiranyakashipu, was a great atheist and declared enemy of the Lord. But despite all this, Hiranyakashipu was awarded salvation due to his being the father of Maharaj Prahlad. the Lord is so kind that he gives all protection to the family members of his devotee, and thus the devotee has no need to bother about his family members. Even if one leaves such family members aside to discharge devotional service, Maharaj Yudhishthira and his brothers were the sons of Kunti, the paternal aunt of Lord Krishna, and Maharaj Parikshit admits the patronage of Lord Krishna because of his being the only grandson of the great Pandavas. I'll read the translation one more time. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. Namaste, Sarthi Devi, Gauravani Pachana, Nirvisesha Shunyavadi, Paschacha, Deshatarive, Pancha, Kalpa, Triyubhyasya, Kripasam, Yavriyavacha, Patitana, Ampavane, Vyar, Vaishnavi, Anamo, Namaha. This first line in the purport, it really struck out to me, and it made me stop immediately and think, because it seemed almost contradictory. A pure and exclusive devotee of the Lord serves his family interest more dexterously than others who are attached to illusory family affairs. And my first thought was, oh, that doesn't make any sense, because isn't it that as devotees, the intention is to detach oneself from family life, especially as life goes on. And that's the purpose of the later stages and ashrams of life. And even as a grihastha, it's always meant to be directed to the Supreme Lord. So how is it that a pure and exclusive devotee serves his family interest more skillfully than those who are engaged in material life? And this point that's being brought up here, it really brings to the potency of bhakti, and it really brings to the power of devotional service. And when performing devotional service, there's a potency that goes far beyond, or beyond what we can comprehend with our senses, honestly. We can see we're becoming more spiritually inclined, and maybe we're having an effect on people that we talk to, and we can perceive so much, but there's so much that happens in the background. And there's so much sukriti that takes place and affects the lives of others around us that we don't even know. And these things, simply by hearing them and having faith, we can understand a little bit. But ultimately, the potency of Krishna is beyond our logical understanding. And the potency of devotional service is also beyond our logical understanding. But he explains, Prabhupada explains very nicely how this works. So generally, people are attached to family matters, and the whole economic impetus of human society is moving under the influence of family affection. So everything is rotating around this idea and this ideology of the family affection, the attachment to one another, and that's a binding force in the material world. But it says here that the Lord gives special protection to the family members and the descendants of a devotee, even such members are themselves non-devotees, with an exclamation mark. So really making a statement. So by being a devotee of Krishna, just by being a devotee, automatically you're benefiting your family more than being a non-devotee, even if you are so much engrossed for caring for the family. And so this is taking a meta perspective. It's looking almost like a bird's eye view on family life as a whole, or as, you know, the life of a devotee as a whole and the effect they have. Because you can say from, you know, how could that be? How could maybe someone is a devotee and they have no involvement with their family, or their family is suffering? And of course, it's not stating that that's okay necessarily. It's not stating that it's okay not to take care of one's family or certain aspects like that. But it's saying in the greater perspective, by being a Vaishnav, there's so much that is well done for family members. And what I thought of after that is a similar, at least contradiction for me, and that's hearing that Krishna consciousness is the greatest welfare work. You hear that and at first thought, you go, well, how is that possible? How can just chanting and dancing and going around the streets and maybe not even interacting with people, how can that be more beneficial than helping those directly who are suffering? Helping those that are in poverty, that need help, that may need food, money, shelter, all kinds of assets, material assets, to help them in such an uncomfortable and dire situation? How can one say that? What the Bhagavatam looks from the soul perspective, you know, if we help someone in our actions in this world, of course it's important, but ultimately it only gets them so far. So Bhagavatam always looks at things from the grander perspective. We can look at things day to day, month to month, year to year in this lifetime. What about lifetime after lifetime and the whole span of almost unlimited lifetimes that we've had? The example of Prahlad Maharaj is given here, which is very apt. Prahlad Maharaj was a very great devotee, and his father was a very great opposite of a devotee. He was a very great demon. And he was completely averse to worship of the Lord. And not only that, he wasn't a good father. He was a very, very abusive father. So the relationship was automatically, you can see that that's a toxic, abusive relationship that there should be no sort of family affection for. But we see to Prahlad Maharaj's acute compassion and real Vaishnav behavior. What does he pray after his father is, you know, his life was taken by the Supreme Lord? More honestly, he was delivered by the Supreme Lord. So he prays to Lord Nrisingadev. He says, "O Supreme Lord, because you are so merciful to the fallen souls, I ask you for only one benediction." And this is after Lord Nrisingadev offers so many different boons to Prahlad Maharaj. But out of his compassion, he asks just for one benediction. "I know that my father, at the time of his death, had already been purified by your glance upon him. But because of his ignorance of your beautiful power and supremacy, due to his ignorance, he was unnecessarily angry." He says he was just in ignorance. He didn't understand fully. "And because of this reason, he falsely thought that you were the killer of his brother." He didn't understand things, again, from the meta perspective. He was thinking just on the bodily platform. "And because of this, he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and he committed heavily sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. So, considering all this, I wish that he be excused for his sinful activities." And it's incredible. So, you know, it's after all that was happened to him, after all that was done to him, the mood of a devotee is still to be compassionate to those who may it cause suffering to him, just because of the familial affection and relationship that's there. He recognizes, "I'm only here because of my parents and my family, and the greatest gift I can give them is mercy from the Supreme Lord." And that's just due to his position as being a devotee. He recognized that. And Lord Srinagiri was very pleased. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O great saintly person, your father has been purified. And not only has he been purified, along with 21 forefathers in your family." 21 forefathers. Incredible. "Because you were born in this family, just because you were born in this family," and we understand that birth in the material world is just, you know, that's not, for a materialist, that's all in all, your family, and it says here, everything is, the whole material society is based upon family life and the family, and that's so important for so many, but we understand that that's just our life in the material world, and that's not our real birth, that's not our real constitution. And so it says here, "Because you're born of this family, the entire dynasty has been purified just by Maharaj Prahlad's purity." And Srila Prabhupada, he explains a little further here. It says the word tri saptabhi means seven multiplied by three. If one's family, in one's family, one can count back four or five generations to one's great-grandfather, or even one's great-great-grandfather. But since the Lord mentions 21 forefathers, this indicates that the benediction expands to other families also. Before the present family in which one has taken birth, one must have been born in other families. So not just talking about this lifetime and the family connections from this lifetime, but also the family connections from previous lifetimes. So this goes further and further, and it just gets more and more grand. Thus, when a Vaishnava takes birth in a family, by the grace of the Lord, he purifies not only that family, but also the families of his previous births. So incredible. And then the following verse, the Sringadeva continues, whenever and wherever there are peaceful equipoised devotees who are well behaved and decorated with all good qualities. So really describing Maharaj Prahlad here. Peaceful, equipoised, so equipoised, tortured in so many ways, remained calm, thought of Krishna, and well behaved. He was never angry at his father. He was a perfect gentleman. And decorated with all good qualities, that place and the dynasties there, even if condemned, are purified. And to take this even further, Srila Prabhupada states, wherever exalted devotees stay, not only they and their dynasties, but the entire country is purified. And it's just, it's incredible. So we hear in this Bhagavatam verse that Maharaj Parikshit, he's recognizing this fact. He's recognizing the privilege he had. And sometimes when we're given a situation where we're in a place of privilege, we've been giving a lot, and we've received a lot of, you know, blessings, mercy, maybe position, something we feel we don't deserve. The initial tendency can be to feel maybe guilty, to feel a little bit, why I don't feel deserving of this, maybe humble, and that's okay. But Maharaj Parikshit, from that platform, if you're just thinking from that platform, you'll never use the privilege that you're given. So Maharaj Parikshit, he understood he was given a privilege due to his forefathers, due to the Pandavas and their great devotion, and him being a descendant of the Pandavas, the grandson. For that reason, it says, he states, for this reason, Krishna has accepted me as one of his relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. And it's because of their patronage of Lord Krishna, or the patronage of Lord Krishna, the affection of Krishna to the Pandavas who were so dear to him. He's become taken love unto me. It's like if you have a really good friend, and that friend maybe gets married, and you don't know his or her partner, but automatically it's, oh, you're married to my good friend, just because for that reason you're like family to me. Or, you know, you have a friend who has a child, and automatically they're your nephew or niece. There doesn't have to be any family tie there. Just because they're related, or they're close to someone who's dear to you, therefore they're close to you. And so for Krishna it's the same way. Someone who's close to a devotee, or someone who is in the family of a devotee, automatically, because you're in the family of that devotee, Krishna takes special eye to you. And I was thinking about, I believe it's a statement from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although I've heard it, but I couldn't find the reference. But it stated that Gaurakishore Das Babaji, just by his own bhajan, just by his very, very deep sadhana, he was preventing the progression of Kali Yuga. And it said, due to his bhajan and presence on earth, he had put a pause on the progression of Kali Yuga, because it was so, so potent, due to his devotion. And it's similar to this. He was purifying the whole planet just by that. And that potency was taken and carried on forward by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So the same way, this is really a great inspiration to take to Krishna consciousness. If you love your family, if you love the people around you, and you want to help uplift them, what's one way you can do that? It's as simple as just becoming a better devotee yourself. And you may not see the effects, but by becoming a deeper devotee, becoming closer to Krishna, all those around you will also follow in the same footsteps, the same path, because that potency is so strong. And when Krishna takes notice to you, he takes notice to everybody around you as well. I was also thinking of this in terms of those born into Krishna consciousness. It's sort of a similar thing going on. And so for me, it's like, or for those, my peers, our parents are devotees. They've have come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada's devotees in some way or form. And because of that, I've had the good fortune, or my peers have the good fortune, to be born in a devotee family. So rare, but it's so similar to what Parikshit Maharaj is stating here. Because they're dear to the Lord, they're dear to the Lord's devotees. Because of that reason, Krishna has given favor unto me. Because of that reason, my generation has been born in the family of devotees, and given that privilege by which we can really take advantage of it. And that's what Parikshit Maharaj did. He understood this position that he was in. And he wasn't puffed up because of it. He didn't try to deny it, on the other hand, as well. He recognized it. What did he do? He took full shelter of Krishna, because he knew he was in the best position he would ever be to take shelter of Krishna. There was no better opportunity. And so he recognized it. I wanted to pause here for this verse, also because it's Shivaratri, and I wanted to mention a little bit about Lord Shiva. I know there's a program on Sunday. Hare Krishna Puri. Nice to see you. Very well. They're also celebrating on Sunday at the temple, and there'll be a lecture and an Abhishek and so much going on. But since today is the day, I felt inspired to share a little bit and to research more into Lord Shiva. Shivaratri means the night of Lord Shiva, and it's actually today is Mahashivaratri, so it's the once a year celebration of Lord Shiva, the worship of Lord Shiva. And in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it's stated that on this day, it's called Shivaratri because on this day Lord Shiva personally remains present in all the Shiva lingas on earth. That's really incredible. He says, this is the most essential and important days of the year to honor Sri Krishna's greatest devotee named Lord Shiva. And I was researching a little more on exactly what today is, and there's a lot of, I guess, different explanations of Shivaratri. A common one is that today is the wedding day of Lord Shiva and Parvati, but I also was recently reading that in the Shiva Purana, it stated that that was actually on another day later in the year, more in March, April time, and that today is stated to be the day of puja to Lord Shiva from Vishnu and Brahma, and that they first performed this worship of Lord Shiva when they came to Kailash long, long ago, and after waiting for some time, they saw this very, very huge Shiva Linga, and neither Brahma or Lord Shiva could find the beginning or end to that Linga. It was enormous. And then all of a sudden, Lord Shiva appeared. And when he appeared, Vishnu and Brahma worshipped Lord Shiva with 5 puja items, pancha upacharas. And feeling very, very joyful, Lord Shiva, he gave his blessing and he said, I'm very pleased with your worship. From now on, this day will be called Shivaratri. And I will fully bless anyone who honors this day by worshipping me. And so that began the tradition of Shivaratri in this particular day as a very potent day to worship Lord Shiva. There's another statement in Hari Bhakti Vilas that states that there's 2 very important days for Vaishnavas to observe. And this one really struck me. And I was thinking, 2 very important days, maybe Gaurapurni, maybe. Of course, those are also very important days, but specifically in this section, Srila Sanatana Goswami is stating, these 2 very important days for Vaishnavas to observe are 1, Janmashtami, and 2, Shivaratri. And the reason being is observing the appearance day of the Lord, and also observing the day of puja, the day of worship to his greatest devotee. And so, as a Vaishnav, as a devotee, Lord Shiva, especially, I think in our movement, Lord Shiva and the discussion of Lord Shiva and the understanding of Lord Shiva can easily be something that's a little bit scary. It can be something that's a little bit uneasy or misunderstood. And it's easy to shove the discussion under the carpet a little bit and just say, Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee of Krishna and the tattva is very confusing and therefore I respect from afar. But at the same time, we may be missing out on glorifying the greatest devotee of the Lord without properly understanding him. So why is it something that can be a topic that's difficult to discuss or not discussed so often or misunderstood in many ways? And it's obvious, you know, it's understood that in the hesitancy for demigod worship is there. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. But those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, and my devotees ultimately reach my supreme abode. So in Mauritius, devotees were also struck with this question. So they were coming in contact with many Indians and Hindus who believed Shiva was supreme. And they would say, oh, so, you know, about Lord Shiva, Lord Ram, he was praying to Lord Shiva. He was praying to him on the banks before crossing the ocean to go to Lanka. And so he's taking Lord Shiva as being God. What do you have to say about this? And devotees told Prabhupada, we didn't have an answer. Srila Prabhupada, how do you explain this? And so Prabhupada, he said, Lord Ramachandra worshipped his devotees, just as sometimes Krishna worships Radharani and touched her feet, and just like Krishna was tolerating ear-pulling by Mother Yashoda. That does not mean that Mother Yashoda is the supreme. Krishna was carrying the wooden shoes of Nanda Maharaj. So does that mean that Nanda Maharaj is greater than Krishna? No, it's Krishna's pleasure. Just as sometimes a father carries his son on his shoulders, does it mean that the father is inferior to the son? And Prabhupada concluded, this is a third-class man's conclusion. They don't know who Krishna is, what Ram is. Krishna says, Aham adhirhi devanam. So he is the origin of Lord Shiva. How can Shiva be supreme? We have to consult Shastra. And so there was an Indian gentleman present in the conversation. He continued, so Swamiji, is Shiva not just another name for God? Still insinuating the point that they're on the same platform. And Prabhupada explained it really nicely with an analogy, a little bit about Shiva Tattva. And he said that Shiva, yes, Shiva is next to God, just like yogurt, dahi. You know dahi. What is dahi? It's milk, but it's not milk. Dahi is nothing but milk, but it's not milk. Similarly, Lord Shiva is nothing but Vishnu, but is not Vishnu. He's insinuating Lord Shiva is in his own category. He's not in the category of a Jiva, he's not in the category of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's in his own Vishnu Tattva. Is it clear now? You can say, well, dahi is nothing but milk. Yes, but it is not milk. If instead of milk you take dahi, the result will be different. And if you take milk instead of dahi, that will be different. Even though the milk and dahi is the same thing, and the same substance, the same ingredients. So you have to understand it in that way. Lord Shiva is non-different from the Supreme Lord, but everyone is non-different from the Supreme Lord, but he's still different. That is a perfect philosophy, achintya veda veda tattva, simultaneously one and different. And then Prabhupada went on to explain a little bit about what understanding Lord Shiva as from a Vaishnava perspective. And he said, if you take Lord Shiva to be the supreme, that's an insult. Why? Because Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. No Vaishnava wants to be considered the greatest, or be considered the supreme Lord himself. Vaishnavas want to take the most humble position, consider themselves servants of the servants, the Vaishnavas. Prabhupada said, you are giving me respect as the spiritual master, but if you give me overestimation that you are the king of the whole world, that is an insult. That is not a prayer. If you offer me prayer as I am befitting, then it is all right. But if you give me prayer for which I am not befitting, that's an insult. So you must know what is the position of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. He is the greatest devotee. He is the number one demigod, and everything is all right. But if you say that he is the supreme, then he will feel insulted. What is this nonsense saying? So don't insult him in that way. That will go against your credit. He doesn't like that. And I thought that was very nice. And just a couple paragraphs, Prabhupada really explained how to understand Lord Shiva, how to understand his position, and how to see him as a Vaishnava, and how to approach him as a Vaishnava. And that's the way we do as devotees. In Bhagavatam, it's famously stated, Vaishnavam yuta shambhu. In the full verse, it says, just as the Ganga is the greatest of all rivers, Lord Achyuta is the supreme being amongst deities and Shambhu. And Lord Shambhu, Shiva, the greatest of Vaishnavas. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest of all Puranas. There's when a devotee is very dear to Krishna, we saw this in the example that Srila Prabhupada was giving, that Krishna becomes so endeared by his devotion that the Lord himself starts to worship the devotee. And that's the characteristics and qualities of Krishna, that he's so endeared by the devotion of the devotee. And the devotion is so pure and so loving, he can't help but himself reciprocate in the same way. And he worships the devotee. And this can be confusing for some. But as a devotee, if we see this, then we immediately understand who is a devotee. Just if the Lord is worshiping his own devotee, this should be someone we should take shelter of. This should be somebody that we ask for blessings to approach the Lord, because we can see how dear they actually are. Narad Muni glorifies Lord Shiva in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He states, the best of Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva, the best of Vaishnavas therefore aspire for your mercy. Lord Krishna also has great regard for you, and he extensively spreads your glories. Has Krishna not worshipped you many times in various incarnations, and taken from you many boons? And there is a really beautiful pastime in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, where he himself also worships Lord Shiva. After, on his journey to Jagannath Puri, he stops along the way, and so many pastimes happen. Lord Nityananda breaks his sannyas danda, and so many things are going on. At one point, he stops in an area just outside of Bhubaneswar called Ekamrata, and he visited the Jaleshwar Mahadev temple. It's a very famous deity of Lord Shiva there. And this deity in this temple was very, very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Lord Chaitanya, he stopped at this temple on his way to Puri. And during his stay, there were many brahmanas who were worshipping the deity. And they were chanting, and they were singing Lord Shiva's names, and they were dancing in front of the deity, and they were rubbing sandalwood on the deity, this Shiva Lingam. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he visited there, and he joined in with these brahmanas. Great enthusiasm, great ecstasy, he began to speak the glories of Lord Shiva. And he said he was speaking the glories as if he had 1,000 mouths. And so he continued in this way. And then Lord Shiva, I found this extremely interesting because it includes my name in it. He said he sang before the deity, and he did this to reveal to Lord Shiva that he was most dear to him. He clapped and danced, and he sung Shiva Rama Govinda. Shiva Rama Govinda. He sung this and he danced in front of the deity over and over again. And it said that here Mahaprabhu composed and recited Shivashtakam. It's 8 verses in glorification of Lord Shiva. And it's a really nice Ashtakam. It's quite long as well. So I won't get into the details of it. And this is all this information was taken by Murari Gupta and his references and his account to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But I thought this was so beautiful, and in this way it's showing exactly Lord Chaitanya was so endeared by Lord Shiva, and also setting an example as a devotee. First he was recognizing Lord Shiva as such a wonderful devotee that he himself could not be contained, his ecstasy could not be contained. And at the same time he was also setting an example that worshipping Lord Shiva, or recognizing his position as the greatest devotee, is very important as Vaishnavas. Lord Shiva, Srila Prabhupada, he writes in a purport that Lord Shiva is the spiritual master of the entire universe, and he comes to teach us how to detach from the false ego. And this is very interesting because Lord Shiva is engrossed, or his service, his main role, is to preside over the mode of ignorance, which is presiding over, it's what gives us a sense of false ego when we're connected with the mode of ignorance. So he's in charge of this, but there's a really wonderful pastime that explains and shows how Lord Shiva states how to detach ourselves from false ego, how to come out of this condition of being identifying ourselves with the body. So after the Lord, he sent his Sudarshan Chakra to kill Kashi Raj of Varanasi, and he was in Dwarka, and this pastime happened. But this Kashi Raj was a very great devotee of Lord Shiva. So when this happened, Lord Shiva was really upset and angered, and also uncharacteristic, he hurled his trident at Krishna. He attacked the Supreme Lord. And, of course, he knew that his trident has no match against Sudarshan Chakra, but it happened anyways. Sudarshan Chakra went after Lord Shiva, and he, running away, there's nothing he could do to stop the Sudarshan Chakra. And eventually Lord Shiva stopped and he prayed to Krishna after being chased by Sudarshan Chakra. And Krishna said, "You know my prowess. You know my position. Why do you have this mentality? You fought for me just for Kashi Raj's sake, and you try to overcome my Sudarshan Chakra. Why did you do this? You know that you can't even do this, that you have no ability to." And so, testing Lord Shiva a little bit, he said, "I think there's no one more averse to me right now in the universe than you." And Lord Shiva was very upset, and he could understand, but it was due to this being in charge of the mode of ignorance and was taking such a heavy effect on him that he prayed to Lord Krishna and he said, "My dear Lord, I am not like that. I know nothing moves independently of you. I know you have a powerful Maya energy that no one can overcome, not even me. And somehow or other, you've given me a false ego, and I do not recognize anymore who is superior and who is inferior." So even the greatest devotees, when they're coming in contact with Tamaguna, it can have such a heavy effect. Maya can have such a heavy effect on us. Even the greatest Vaishnava can be affected by it. But he sincerely prayed. He says, "Please, please help me. This has bound me so tight." So the Lord, he stated, you know, he was pleased by Lord Shiva's really sincere plea. That he said, "Okay, I'll give you this boon. Everything, every time, anywhere I am, wherever my lila is taking place, and wherever my abode is, I invite you to come to each of my holy places and reside there." And so we see, wherever there's a holy place, wherever there's a tirtha, Vrindavan, Navadvipam, there's always a deity of Lord Shiva there. He's always presiding around the holy place. He's always trying to seek the lotus feet of the Lord. And I think the most important understanding of Lord Shiva, or a way we can approach Lord Shiva as devotees, is understanding from this perspective. Lord Shiva is a devotee of Krishna in Braj. Not only is he a devotee of Lord Krishna in Braj, he's also the protector of the Dham. He's also the one who gains or gives entrance into the Dham, into the Leela of the Lord. And as devotees, that's our goal, going back to Godhead. We want to enter the Dham, want to gain residence in the Dham, and serve Krishna in this way. This is Vrindavan Dham is our goal. And so in order to achieve this goal, there's certain devotees that grant us entrance into the Dham. When I was there a few years ago, we went on a parikram, a really nice parikram, to visit the five gatekeepers of Vrindavan, so to say. There's five personalities that are considered gatekeepers or guardians of the Dham that can grant entrance. There's Jamuna Devi, there's Brinda Devi, Purnamasi, or Yogamaya, the dust of Vrindavan, and Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva and Gopeshwar Mahadev is often and famously known as that deity which protects the Dham. And devotees always go there, often first when they go to the Vrindavan, worship Lord Shiva, ask for blessings to gain entrance, ask for blessings to approach Krishna in Vrindavan. And there's actually at least four main areas of residence of Lord Shiva in Brajbhumi, where he takes precedence to be the gatekeeper. And Gopeshwar Mahadev is the first one, and no one can enter Vrindavan without his permission. But there's a really beautiful story on how Lord Shiva got this position and got this service. Being a great devotee of Krishna and being a great hearer of the pastimes of Krishna and Braj, he always wanted to enter into the Leela and be part of this Leela, not just see it from the outside. So he came to Vrindavan and he entered by the Yamuna and knew the Rasa dance, and he was met by Purnamasi, who said, "No, you can't participate. You can't participate in the Rasa Leela. You have to have female, you have to have a gopi body. You have to be a gopi. You're not a gopi." And so He said, okay, what do I do? How can I become a gopi? So she said, follow me. And they went to Mansarovar. And in the lake, she instructed him, please take a bath. So he took a bath, and he came out, and he was a gopi. But without any further instruction, completely ecstatic, he was off to the Rasa Lila. He was just so eager to take part into the Lila of Krishna, and be part of this. So he ran off to the Rasa Mandap. And when he arrived, the gopis were accommodating. They were very accommodating. When a new gopi would come, a new girl would come, they'd ask, where is she from? And they'd be very sweet and gentle. So Lord Shiva came as a gopi, Gopishvari. She came. And they gathered around her and said, oh, what village are you from? He almost said, Kailash. No, not Kailash, I can't say that. And he was silent, didn't know what to say. And they go, oh, what's your husband's name? Nothing to say, silence again. How many cows does your husband have? How many children do you have? And quickly he realized this wasn't planned, this wasn't me. I can't fake being a gopi. And then they started realizing something's going on. And they became hostile. They started looking at him. You know, who is this intruder in the Rasa Lila? Are they going to hurt our Radha and Krishna? And they started coming closer and ganging up. And at that point, Purnamasi came back and said, gopis, please, this is Mahadev. This is Lord Shiva. And when I heard this, it was just so funny. That here is Lord Shiva, this destroyer of the universe. You know, the great, the unlimited Lord Shiva, the fearful Lord Shiva to many. The one who the Vrajavasis themselves worship in order to gain the favor of Lord Krishna. This is also what they do. And there he is, practically being embarrassed by quote-unquote village girls. This is such a... It just shows the hierarchy and the level of where the gopis are at. Completely different level. And Purnamasi said to Lord Shiva, maybe this is, you know, actually no one can participate in the Rasa dance unless they're actually a gopi. And no one can come from the out. Even the greatest Vaishnava cannot participate in. And seeing this and hearing this, Lord Shiva became very upset. And it's upset in the term that he was, you know, he really wanted so much to be part of this Lila. But she recognized this and she said, okay, well, there's one service that you can do. Even though you cannot enter it from a distance, you can be there. And not only that, I'll give you the service to protect the Lila, to protect the Rasa dance, and to protect the Dham. You can be the guardian, you can be the gatekeeper. And so from this point on, Lord Shiva, he stayed outside, just the center of Vrindavan, really. Vrindavan town and Gopishmar Mahadev. And this is his position to this day. And not only that, he's there in other major parts of Braj. He's there in Radhakund, who's Kundeshwar Mahadev. He's there in Govardhan near Manasi Ganga as Chakleshwar Mahadev. He's there in Nandagaon at Krishna's home, in the home of Nanda Baba as Nandishwar Mahadev. In fact, the whole hill in which on the top is the home of Krishna and Balaram of Nanda Maharaj is called Nandishwar Hill. And that hill in itself is also a personification of Lord Shiva. He thousands of years back, and long before Krishna came on earth to do his pastimes, he prayed. And he did so much austerity to the Lord. He said, I just want to be a mountain in Vrindavan. Krishna said, what do you mean a mountain? He goes, a mountain so that I can constantly take the dust of you and the coward boys and the gopis. This is his position. So like this, wherever there is a pastimes of Lila of the Lord going on, Lord Shiva is also present there. And why is that? He's the greatest devotee. The greatest devotee has to be close with it. Wherever Krishna is, he's seeking that out. Just like a bee is seeking out wherever the nectar is, he's always going to that spot. So the devotee is always trying to find where Krishna is and reside there. And that's his only desire. And I'll end with one prayer, and this is by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And there's a recollection of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur praying this in Bhuvaneshwar to a Shivalingam. It's recorded in The Harmonist, that he offered these prayers in front of Lord Shiva. It says, O Shiva, O gatekeeper of Vrindavan, O you who are accompanied by Uma, Parvati, O you who carry the moon in your hair, O Lord Shiva, worshipped by Sananda Kumar, Sanat Kumar, and Narad Muni. O Gopishwar, the worshipful deity of the gopis, desiring that you bestow upon me love for the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Madhava, who perform joyous pastimes in Braj, I offer my obeisances unto you again and again. And that's how we approach Lord Shiva, understanding that he's the gatekeeper to Vrindavan. He's the worshipable deity of the gopis. They also come to Lord Shiva to gain favor of the Lord. So in the same way, Bhakti Siddhanta prays in the same way. I offer my obeisances unto you again and again. Jai. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, you were saying that Shiva Ratri, that is when in all the Shiva lingams, Lord Shiva is there. So what is that Ratri? What does that word mean? Is there some definition?
My knowledge that it means the night of Lord Shiva.
The like night
Rat means nighttime in Hindi, so the night of Lord Shiva. So it's on this night of the waning or waxing moon, whatever the lunar calculation is, that's the night of Lord Shiva.
Hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was also a little interesting for me too, because we always think as there's a personality and the titi of the personality must mean the appearance day of that personality or so on, but this had a little bit of a different meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been to the at the foot of Nandagram.
Mm-hmm.
There's a temple of Lord Shiva there, and it's right next to you go there, and then there's a little raised pathway that goes to it's trying to think of the name of the place. It's has to do with where Krishna would count the cows. Does anybody remember the name of that place?
I can't recall.
But, yeah. Anyway, it's a really beautiful little setting there.
Mm-hmm.
There's Lord, and there's Nandagram, and I think that particular place is has to do with a pastime where Lord Shiva went to Ananda and Yashoda's house there.
Yeah.
He wanted to see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wanted to see Krishna, and when I think his somebody's was his mother saw him and he said no.
Yeah, they're all scared of him. He told him to go away.
And then Krishna came to him and said, "Somebody came to see me, you know."
Yeah.
made her bring him back. You know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It said in that lila when he came back and he came close to the Lord. The Lord went to touch him with three fingers, touched his head.
Oh,
that's where the three lines came from.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a beautiful story.
Mahashivratri is considered to be two different things, leaders. That one is said to be that when he drank the poison from the mantra.
Okay.
Or the other people say that this is the union of Shiva and Parvati, as well. So these are the two main things that I've heard from Mahashivratri as such.
Mm-hmm.
Shivratri is the day when he was born.
Yeah.
But Mahashivratri is supposed to be.
Thank you. I think Mother Sue could add a question.
I was really appreciated how you're describing the dearness of a devotee of Krishna, and how we might, you know, our cousin gets married and that person automatically is in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so how that mercy extends like so far.
Mm.
And I just really was savoring that whole experience, you know, because I was thinking in the beginning of the movement, especially it was like a war against Maya. So a lot of us, we lived on the streets, you know, just distributing books all day long, you know, all over. And, you know, then thinking later, like, oh, but, you know, maybe we neglected our family or neglected. But actually, like you said, that Krishna, he, first of all, he's not an ingrate. Second of all, he just appreciates it. So everyone benefits from it. And that, in 21 generations, I've heard seven, and I've heard...
Yeah, I was also, my wife and I were discussing yesterday, seven? She's like, seven's a lot. Maybe seven? And then I read 21, and I was like, mind blown.
Wow, it's
incredible.
Like really unbelievable, our fortunate position, so...
Yeah,
just make
very,
us
yeah.
grateful for your
thank advice. You. Thank you for the comment. Yeah, it's like, you know, if we have someone that we are close to, and they love someone, and we automatically have affection for them, but how far can our love go in that sense? Let's say... You know, my brother's wife, automatically I have love for her because she's married to my brother. What about, you know, her brother's wife and her brother's wife? Her, you know, seven times down, I could care less. It's like, it's so far down that it's just, where's the connection? But for Krishna, he's so loving, so much more than we can even consider or imagine, that this is one way to get a grasp of it. Imagine that 21 times down in different lifetimes.
So amazing when you think about it. You know, everything that happened, and out of all the benedictions, that's what he asked for. So
yeah.
How great devotees are so forgiving, and that we to develop that quality of good behavior.
Definitely.
So becoming. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mother Sugata. Yes, please. Of course.
I'm thinking about when you said that you need the benediction of, you know, the five gatekeepers, and I was thinking, there is so many things that I don't know how I'm ever going to get there, because you have to know them to do them, but if you don't know, then how will you ever progress?
I mean, these are, and I mean if you go to Vrindavan and you don't know this and you're still taking shelter, Srila Prabhupada and Radhesham, I'm sure the same, you will get the same effect. But these personalities, I mean, if you know it, these personalities are there and they help us approach the Lord. And that's the essence of it. But if you know, if we don't know certain details of, I don't know, I guess you can say traditions that are done in Braj or certain personalities that are there to help us approach Krishna, that's also okay. We have the essence as it is in approaching our spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada in order to enter the Dham. And that's also there. But these are, I guess you can say, supplementary in a way. Yeah. Please, Prabhu.
Krishna, a little addition to the story about Mother Yasoda when she turned Lord Shiva away. Lord Shiva went off and he started crying. And he cried so much that there was an actual bathing bath.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was there. It's amazing. And it's totally different color than anything else.
Is it still there?
Yeah, what happened is he couldn't see Krishna, so he went off. And he sat there and he was meditating and just started crying. And now there was a Asian doctor.
Incredible. Do you know the name of that sarovar?
Okay.
Ashishvar.
So you're right across from Tarkadam.
Oh, okay. Wow. Incredible. Yeah, when you know these pastimes, these holy places, they hold so much more meaning. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Gantara Shiva Bhagavatam Ki Jai.